is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hello, hello. Happy Mother's Day, everybody, as we welcome you into a Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM alongside Michael Lombardi, who's out in Jersey, Stormy Bonatoni here holding it down in Las Vegas, the beautiful Circa Resort and Casino. Michael, if we had to set an over-under percentage on how many of our listeners are out there right now hustling to go get Mother's Day flowers for their mom, their wife, whatever, what number would you set of that?
Oh, I would say it's – well, you know, the morning – I would say yesterday afternoon was the most volume because, you know, it kind of catches up on you a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, the last-minute one doesn't work. It's hard. You know, you got to have a little bit more planning in this. And certainly we wish all the mothers happy Mother's Day. I know the mother in my life – my wife, who was a wonderful mother for two of our kids, she had to carry the ball quite a bit. And, of course, I got two great daughter-in-laws who provided me with great-grandchildren, so they're the greatest mothers for me. So, you know, it's like I tweeted out today, I always love my mama, that song by the Intruders. You know, it's kind of the right play today.
Absolutely. I'll shout out my mom, Sherry, as well. I'm going to hang out with her later today. But you're right, flowers are at a premium today. You got to do it the day before, people. Michael, yesterday... Yeah. There was no on-court NBA, which means I know that got you all rested up for today. The best two words in sports, game seven. How ready are you? Let's go. Well,
I am ready, but, you know, I've been scarred, Stormy. You don't understand. See, I'm from a, you know, a generation that has lived this before in the old Boston Garden. And, you know, in 1982, Andrew Toney became the Boston Strangler because the Sixers got up 3-2 in the series coming home for game six and lost by 13 points to the Celtics. And then they had to go up to Boston on that bad court with Red Auerbach smoking his cigar in the arena. And Andrew Toney just had a day of 32 points, and that was kind of one of the great memories of my 76er fandom. But today may be a little bit of a different story. It's an interesting series, really. Mm-hmm. When you look at the odds for who's going to get to the finals, Boston is still the favorite at +130. The Sixers are +900, and the and the Heat are like +1100. I mean, it's remarkable, right?
Yep.
So, to me, you know, all Sixer fans, we have gone through the disappointments of Game 7, you know, whether it's in Toronto or going back to 21 when Ben Simmons doesn't want to dunk the ball against the Atlanta Hawks at home. So there's a lot of scars we have to go through. It's going to require a lot of therapy today, Stormy. You're going to have to help.
I was trying to hype you up and, like, provide the energy, positivity. It ain't over till it's over.
I got positivity. I was out last night with the great Bill Berman and Anissa Berman. Happy birthday, Anissa. This is also her birthday and Mother's Day. And so I said, are you betting the game tomorrow? And he says, oh, yeah, I'm betting. I said, I think they're going to win tonight. I kind of get this sense. I'm a Debbie Downer on Philly. You know that. I mean, I know you keep reminding me that I am a fan. But this is a game where whatever coach loses probably is getting fired, right? This is a coach get fired game.
Yeah.
And I just think that, and there's a lot of pressure on Missoula, really. I think Philly doesn't have, I know everybody thinks they do, but everybody thinks they're going to lose. And, you know, I believe when everybody thinks one way, you got to go the other way.
No doubt. And the Celtics are a 6.5-point favorite in this one today over your Sixers total sitting 201, 201.5. But to your point about the coaches potentially getting fired, this is a Celtics team that obviously made the NBA Finals last year, didn't get over the hump. They have to let go of their coach, Ime Udoka, who was very beloved by this team, who had them put to form defensively and got them to that point. And so it seems almost like they jumped the gun going ahead and giving the contract to Missoula to be their head coach. And then Doc Rivers certainly up against it. Maybe he's going to get the Monty Williams treatment here, which reminds me, like, how surprising or not surprising was it for you to see that news come through yesterday that the new owner of the Phoenix Suns, Matt Ishbia, goes ahead and fires the two-time NBA Coach of the Year yesterday after the Suns lose to the Nuggets?
Well, I mean, he bought the team. He can put whoever he wants in there. New ownership usually tries to make a change. So it didn't surprise me. They fell short. You know, it's like Coach Bud. He got fired. Expectations are what get you fired. You know, if nobody expected the Suns to win, Monty wouldn't have lost his job. But everybody expects you to get past the second round. And I think it's the same thing for Doc Rivers, and I think it's the same thing for Missoula. Now, where Missoula's got a lot of problems is Marcus Smart comes out and says, you know, we told him we need to put Robert Williams in the lineup, right? Like, they're coaching the team. When you go to the sideline, Al Horford's coaching the team. I mean, if I were Brad Stevens, the general manager of the Celtics, and I'm watching what's going on, I'm saying we're of absence of leadership. We don't have a commander down there on the court. You know, and if we're fortunate enough to win this game, Spoelstra's going to outcoach us. Same thing with Philly, too, when we come to mind with the great Doc Rivers. But to me, I think that's so telling. And in a game seven, I think all the pressure is on Boston because if they lose this, I mean, they are clearly the favorite by the betting odds to win the whole thing. And the pressure's really on them. Now, do I think the 76ers in the fourth quarter will be in condition and your man Embiid will be able to make plays? I mean, please give him the ball. I'm not sure, but I think that the kind of the narrative about they're out is kind of helps them a little bit more. They're going up there with nothing to lose.
Michael, I'm finding it hard to get that visual out of my head where in the final minutes of game six, Harden and Embiid are just walking up the floor. I think it was Doris Burke who just like, I don't want to say she was, yeah, it's like, I don't want to say she was appalled, but for lack of a better word, appalled for the way that was playing out.
She has been the only critic. She called, I mean, and Philly went berserk when she did it 2 years ago when she said he's not in shape. She has been the only real critic of this whole mythology that's attached to Embiid. He isn't in great shape. He's not in great shape now. You can blame it on the, oh, he had the knee injury. Okay, go ahead. If you want to make that excuse, please feel free. I watched the guy. I've watched professional athletes my whole life. He's not in great shape. Everybody in the NBA knows it except for the media. Nobody talks about it. He underachieves, and the players on Boston know it. And she at least called him out. When they were walking up the court, it was so, to me, it's everything why I get so frustrated with the team because what I believe wins championships, they don't do. And so you say, well, how do you predict they're going to win today? Well, you know, it's one of those, you can win one game. Do I think they can beat Miami? I've said this all along. They will not beat Miami. I said this if they were the 3 seed and Miami was a 6 seed.
JVT and I were on the show the other day, and I was like, I was sad that I didn't have you that day specifically so that I could say, okay, 76ers, if they advance, they get the Heat, just like Michael said. Are they going to go down to the 8 seed Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler? Crazy to think about. What I wanted to gauge your opinion on this quote from Doc Rivers, though, coming out of practice this week, because so much has been made of Doc Rivers in closeout games, right? He has a 6-9 in game sevens, most game seven losses of any coach in NBA history. He's never won a game seven on the road, and then the closeout game situation. And he said, this is a little bit of a long quote, so bear with me, just because you lose a closeout game doesn't mean you don't win that series. No one talks about that. So with our guys, I tell them, just hang in there, own your record, own everything, embrace it and attack it, but don't focus on winning. Focus on playing. Playing equates to winning. Worrying about winning will get you in trouble. Just play the right way and we'll be good. Is that concerning at all that he's saying don't concern yourself with winning a critical game seven that'll punch you into the Eastern Conference Finals?
Well, I think he doesn't understand how to win game six. He's lost 32 of them. I mean, he's an expert on how to lose the closeout game. I mean, no coach in the history of the NBA has had 32 losses like that. So, you know, I think what he's trying to say there, I don't think he's worded it really well. He's trying to say, hey, look, you know, the score will take care of itself. The Bill Walsh quote. You know, let's just play. Let the process unfold. Let's play our best.
We love the process. We do love the process.
Yeah, let's move the ball back and forth. Let's make sure we stay attached to one another. Let's not give up on our identity. I think to me what he said kind of was that, but I don't think he said it really well enough for it to explain it, so there's some confusion. But look, at the end of the day, he's going to have to adjust to the Robert Williams in the starting lineup, as JVT talked about yesterday, changes a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It makes them a better defensive team, and it allows them to run the floor a little bit. I mean, I think this game really comes down to fast break points, and we know Philly, because of your boy Embiid not getting up and down the court, is not a great fast break defense. You know, so, and that's where the game has to go, because when they get in that half court set, it becomes harder for Boston, and they got to shoot really well, and they have it. But when they get out in the open court, you know, like when they did in game three and they outscored them 15-7, or when they get, you know, in the open court against, you know, in the last game, they outscored them 24-18 in the open court. That's where they gain the advantage.
Yeah, and Joe Mazzulla electing to go big, you almost wonder why he didn't do that sooner, knowing that that was the starting lineup that helped you get to a conference finals a year ago. I mean, Mazzulla was a part of that coaching staff. He knows what helped them get that success. With this total being set so low at 201, we talk all the time about these game sevens being played tighter, being more defensive, being lower scoring. Game sevens have gone under the total 71% of the time since 2018, 62% of the time since 2003. Do you feel that, I mean, this number is just so low, though. Do you have a lean of whether or not this might be an under or an over game?
You know, I got to think with the line at 6.5, I think it goes over. I kind of believe it goes over. I here's what I don't think. I don't think either team is going to shoot as poorly as they did. I don't think Tatum's going to shoot as poorly, nor do I think the 76ers Harden. You know, Al Horford hasn't made a three in two games. I can't imagine this bad shooting is going to continue down the road. I think it's got to get a little bit better. I think that that's a little too small. I mean, you're talking about a game in the 90s with this total at 201.
No question.
I think it's going to go into the – I think it'll be a little bit more, especially if this fast break thing gets going. And I expect Harden to shoot them. Now, Harden's track record – we talk about Doc's
which James
track
Harden
record
are we
going to
get? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like what's James Harden's game seven? You know, how are they going to handle it? That's the problem. I think that's really it. So, look, there's a lot – this is – whatever coach loses, I would really not answer my telephone for about 3 days because it's probably going to be bad news.
Well, we can talk it all through with Marcus Hayes, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. When we come back from this quick break, we're going to get all angles of this game because after Marcus, we've got Jay King, the Celtics beat reporter for The Athletic, and closing out the hour with our guy, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. Get his opinion from all the betting angles, props, as well as the Monty Williams firing, what that means for the Suns moving forward.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all of the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and, of course, where the money does not match that public opinion. And you can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. You can check out betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Back here on the Lombardi Line, the Western Conference Finals are set. Nuggets, a minus 140 series favorite over the Lakers, the Miami Heat, the 8 seed that shocked the world to earn their spot in the conference finals, now waiting in the wings for the result of tonight's big game 7 between the Philadelphia 76ers and our Boston Celtics. We bring in Marcus Hayes, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, to help us further that conversation. And Marcus, you and Michael have gone back and forth a number of times, and you're in for a treat, my friend. We have a slightly optimistic Michael Lombardi in our midst today.
Oh, my goodness. I did not expect that.
You know, Marcus, I kind of get the sense. I want to know your opinion. I think this is coach go home, right? I think if Doc loses, he gets fired. I think if Mazzulla loses, he gets fired. I think this is coach go home game. I'm not saying Doc's going to stay on even if he loses the next round. But to me, like this is a game where I get the sense everybody expects Philly to lose, and that's probably a good thing. Whenever the pressure's on Philly, like if they win this game and they go play Miami, the pressure's on them. They can't handle the pressure. I think they play better when there's nothing to play for. They're kind of loose.
Yeah, they're a weird team. They don't have a real leader, and they haven't since they traded Drew Holiday for the rights to Nerlens Noel, which began the process, which has been disastrous. So
thank you, Marcus.
They lack that. And the closest thing they had was Jimmy Butler in 18, and they were in a situation where if they retained Butler, they would have had to not extend Ben Simmons and fire Brett Brown, and that just wasn't going to happen. So they're a team without a leader. They're a team without really an identity. And other teams hate to face those teams. They like teams that are predictable. Philly's unpredictable. So, yeah, they'll probably blow them up by 30 tonight.
They have won two of the three. Go ahead, Michael.
You say, well, he says that, and he's right. They have no leader. And this is where, if the guy is the MVP of the league, now Kevin Durant called Jokic the greatest center he's seen. And I mean, that endorsement to me was the MVP, really. It was where the MVP, I know he's won it twice, but if he is the MVP, how does he not win this game, Marcus?
Well, I mean, Nikola Jokic hasn't been super successful in the playoffs either. I mean, we're talking about a two-time MVP who's never really won anything. He's not a point guard. You know, if you want to have that argument about point guards who need to produce, then we're looking at a point guard in James Harden who needs to produce to protect his legacy. Harden's been the difference in all three losses. When he doesn't play aggressively, they lose. It's just that simple. Joel Embiid's playing on a bad knee again, and he's playing with a point guard who's imperfect again. So I have a hard time, you know, sort of blaming what does or doesn't happen on Joel Embiid because he's not in control of the ball. He didn't touch the ball for 4 minutes at the end of a tight game that they were leading in game six, a closeout game at home. And that wasn't because he wasn't working for it. It wasn't because he wasn't on the floor. So I think it's less relevant when it's a wing player or a center that, okay, well, they didn't win big, so they're not worthy. You know, Barkley had the same issue in Phoenix, right?
Can you, Marcus, go a little bit farther on James Harden? Because I feel like he has stepped up largely in this series. He had obviously the two big games and then that 17-point game where he was really just doing a lot of different things on the court that helped that team to win. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a closeout game, a big, important game, how many times historically when he's been in a position to where you need to see him rise to the occasion, he hasn't done that? What James Harden do you anticipate we see tonight?
I don't know which one we're going to get because nobody's more hard to predict than James Harden. But you're right, Stormy. The series has swung on the efficiency of James Harden. And what they're doing is kind of weird. It's kind of like what they did with Ben Simmons, except it's bitten them twice in that he scored 45 in points in game four and 45 points in game one and 42 points in game four and was, you know, lethally efficient in game five. He's better than Ben Simmons. But what he won't do is he won't shoot pull-up jumpers in the lane if the lane is clogged. And I know that's kind of granular and nerdy, but that's the difference in the three games where he was good and the three games where he was bad. So we'll see which James Harden decides to show up. He's easily the weirdest and least predictable great athlete I've ever been around. Because, Mike, you know, great athletes usually have a template, and they fill in that template the best in their best games. But you never know game to game what you're going to get from James, and you haven't known since, 2009 when he came in the league.
Yeah. I mean, he's 9 for 44 in the three losses. He's 2 for 19 in three-point shots in the three losses. So, you know, it all comes down to when he shoots the ball well, they win. When he doesn't, they won't. So I don't disagree with you.
I'll say this. He should be shooting more. It should be more than 9 for 40. It should be 12 for 60. When he is timid, he doesn't shoot enough, which is something I never thought I'd say about James Harden.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think to me, and then when he's not shooting well, it just seems the ball becomes stagnant into Embiid's arms, and then there's really no movement and nobody kind of flows. When they do play, when Harris kind of gets going, they kind of have a sense of it all. But to me, I want to ask you this, you know, Josh Harris, the new owner of the Washington football team, assuming he gets approval, he sits down there right near Doc, and I watch him closely, you know, and his face to me looks like a cartoon character sometimes because it goes white to whiter. It looks like there's a lot of – he feels it. Do you get that sense in talking to people in the organization that if they don't win this game today, they could blow up the entire thing?
I get the sense that it would be a domino effect because I don't think Josh Harris is the issue as much as Daryl Morey. But the first domino that would fall, in my opinion, is they would see James Harden opt out of his contract looking for a move or a bigger final deal. He's 33 years old. The second domino that would fall is they would probably fire Doc. And the third domino that would fall, it would take longer, is Joel Embiid would decide whether or not he wants to stay and whether or not he wants to force a trade. Now, there is an alternate universe in which they lose. James Harden says, hey, you know what? I like it here. Let's run it back. Because honestly, he took less money to stay here this year. He opted out last year. and he has an opt-in year for the next year, I think $39 million. I think he's making $35 or $36 right now. Joel Embiid says, well, if he's staying, I'm staying. And they both go to management and say, you're not firing Doc Rivers. We like him. One of the weird things about James Harden's arrival here in Philadelphia last season at the trade deadline was he said, the main reason I wanted to come here, you know, yes, I love to play with Joel, but I've always wanted to play for Doc Rivers so they can save his job.
Wow. With obviously so much on the line tonight and this being a game that can punch them to a position in the Eastern Conference Finals and so much being put into the process over the last handful of years, is this the most high leverage game you can think of in recent franchise history?
Yeah, there was, believe it or not, in 2012, the year before the process got kickstarted, they had a Game 7, second round game in Boston with Drew Holiday, Andre Iguodala, and Elton Brand fronting that crew against the big three in Boston, you know, Garnett, Pierce, and Ray Allen. And they were down 3 with 4 minutes in a Game 7 in 2012. If they had won that game, there would never have been a process. Doug Collins would have continued to coach. They'd have never traded Iguodala and 3 other draft picks for Andrew Bynum, the worst trade in sports history. They would not have been bad the next year. They would not have hired Sam Hinkie in 2003. So this is the biggest game since that Game 7. People like to talk about, you know, the Game 2 or Game 3 in the 2001 NBA Finals, or I think they had to win 3 Game 7s to get to the NBA Finals in 2001 with Iverson. I would posit this is the biggest game since 2012, and those 2001 games were much, much more significant because they cemented the legacy of Allen Iverson. This one will, unfortunately, I think, cement the overall legacy of James Harden and the Sixers' legacy of Joel Embiid.
What do you think? What's your prediction, Marcus?
You know, they're the Sixers are the better team when they play right. I'm going to say they play right, they win by 5, and I get to go to Miami twice.
Ooh, maybe take a look for that alternate spread then, ladies and gentlemen, with the Sixers already getting 6.5. They could win by that margin. Marcus, you are awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Marcus.
You for having me.
Awesome.
Marcus Hayes, make sure you check out his work over at the Philadelphia Inquirer, doing great work over there. Michael, I was disappointed, though. I teed you up to be optimistic off the top, and you went, this is a whoever loses the game, they're getting fired.
Well, I mean, I think it is, but Marcus is right. I think Marcus is right that, you know, that generated that loss in 12 generated this whole Ponzi scheme called the process, you know, and if anybody does any research on it, they'll realize it was truly a Ponzi scheme that never worked. I mean, it really never worked because it takes talent to evaluate talent.
Great getting the Philly side from Marcus. We will hear from Celtics beat reporter for The Athletic, Jay King, and get that perspective coming up next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's going on, guys? Happy Sunday. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Remember, with so much to bet on over the next 30 days, VSiN's here to help you out. And for a limited time, we have a great offer, just $9.99. It'll get you insight into daily baseball best bets. We've got the NBA and NHL postseason, but only VSiN Pro subscribers will get access to the daily recap of top plays made by all of our VSiN show hosts and guests. You also get tools like betting splits that let you see where the money and bets are moving for every game, as well as a top VSiN experts leaderboard that's new to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Again, just $9.99 if you sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. It is the hour of Game 7, the Boston Celtics hosting the Philadelphia 76ers tonight alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, continuing to break down all things Game 7. We welcome into the show Jay King, Celtics beat reporter for The Athletic, at By Jay King on Twitter. Were you surprised, Jay, just off the top, to see the Celtics, again, a pretty significant favorite at home in what is a closeout game tonight, laying 6.5?
Yeah, this has been a hard-fought series. This has been a series where I think the Celtics have had to kind of rescue themselves time after time. I think they really doubted themselves in Game 5, probably for the first time all season. So, yeah, I was surprised to see the size of the spread, for sure.
Jay, let me ask you, Marcus Smart kind of had some interesting quotes, but the one that caught my eye was he said that, you know, that Missoula's really learning and listening. I mean, who's coaching this team? Is it Al Horford, Marcus Smart, or is it Missoula?
No, that's been one of Joe Mazzulla's themes all season, is that it's a collaborative thing, and he wants to listen to the players, and he wants the players to listen to him. And so for anyone who's been around the team, I don't think that was eye-opening at all. Joe's thing this whole year has been not to really call too many timeouts, and obviously he should have called one at the end of game four, as he has said. But he just wanted players to become problem solvers, to figure things out better, to do things on their own. And so he's really empowered them in a lot of ways. And I think that's a team dynamic that has really worked for Boston. So really, like, when Marcus said that, I don't think anyone who's been around the team has been surprised, but I understand why it came across the way it did to people outside who haven't been paying too much attention.
Well, I know there have been a lot of questions about Joe Mazzulla this back half of the season into the playoffs and some of those decision makings. I love what he did in game six, going big and bringing Robert Williams back onto the floor. How does that change their dynamic, especially defensively, what he's brought?
Yeah, I just thought they needed to change their energy after game five. They seemed just stunned in that game. And you could see that there was even some confidence issues. You know, Al Horford passed up an open three. There were times when they just really seemed just out of it. And so I thought they needed to just change their energy. And Rob Williams is a guy who always brings energy, and they know that they can trust their defense whenever he's on the court. And listening to the other starters, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Jason Tatum, they all believed that was the right move. They were all thrilled to make that move. And that's the starting lineup that brought them to the finals last year. That's the group that they really have so much trust in defensively. And I thought the way they started the game in game six, going up 15-3, really throttling the 76ers offense and taking away their rhythm, because Joel Embiid's been in a great rhythm this series. James Harden has been in a great rhythm for some games this series. And to take that away early, I do think not only did that give the Celtics a lead that, you know, that they ended up squandering, but it also took away the good vibrations that the 76ers had earlier in the series. And when it came to crunch time, you know, the shots that were open for D'Anthony Melton, for James Harden, for those guys, just weren't as easy shots because of the way that group took the rhythm away.
Do you feel like Mazzulla's coaching for his job today?
No, I don't. The 76ers, look, they're a really good team. And Joe was put in just a brutally tough situation. He learned that he was going to be the coach days before training camp. And obviously, they're a great team, a talented team. He won 57 games with them. He did a really good job. He's 34 years old. I think the Celtics knew he would be learning on the job in some ways, but they finished number two in offense. They finished number two in defense. Their offensive execution is far above where it was last season, and I think Joe has a lot to do with that, and it's easy to overlook what he's done, how he's impacted that team, and how he's kept them together after losing their coach to a suspension. And like, that could have been a crazy, crazy situation, especially considering that most of the assistant coaches were Ime Udoka's close friends and have loyalty to Ime Udoka. So he handled all of that incredibly well. And he does have some game management stuff to work out. But I think overall, he's a very talented leader who has shown a lot for the Celtics this season. And no, I don't think that. I think they have a lot of trust in Joe and that organization.
So whereas a lot of people thought that maybe the Celtics jumped the gun a little bit, taking away that interim and hiring him full-time, you think that was the right move?
Yeah, and I also think when you look at the timing of it, just from the standpoint of how the locker room would have gone through it, Ime Udoka got a head coaching job during the playoffs. And if they hadn't done that earlier in the season, then players might have thought Ime was coming back after his suspension was over. And when he got the Houston Rockets job, it might have been a shock to everyone. And so I think on top of being a move that they think will help them long term because they believe in Joe, it was also the right timing, because otherwise the Ime Udoka hiring for Houston would have come with the Celtics in the playoffs, and they were really emotional when he almost took the Brooklyn job earlier this year, because the players still have a lot of respect for Ime. They know how much he contributed to their turnaround last season, and that whole situation was just stunning to everyone involved.
What's your call tonight, Jay? What do you think happens? And what do you think the key for Boston to win this game will be?
I've been wrong all series, so I don't know if I'm the right one to ask. But I think game six was just kind of cathartic for Boston. I really felt like they had to do some soul searching between game five and six. They had to lean on each other. They had to change the energy. And I think the start that they had and then the finish that Jason Tatum had was a big deal for reinstilling the confidence of a group that really, to me, was tested for the first time all season in game five. They had no other real reason to doubt themselves before that. You know, they lost game one in this series, but they thought it was because they let down when Joel Embiid was out. They lost game four in the series, but they could tell themselves, oh, we were great in the fourth quarter. We just missed one key mistake at the end that lost that game. And game five was really the first time, I think, that they doubted themselves. And to have the response that they did in game six, and for Tatum to have the finish that he did in game six, I think that will carry them to a big game seven at home.
What's been going on with Jason Tatum, by the way? Just that obviously the fourth quarters have been great, the second half production, but he's gotten off to a couple of games now where just really, really cold starts in the first half.
Yeah, he's got to come out faster. He can't be 0-5, 0-10. They need him to do more scoring. And he's done a lot for them. He's averaging more than 10 rebounds per game in this series. He defends at a high level. I think his defense often gets overlooked because of everything he does offensively. But they need him to score, and especially in game six. Like, that was in danger of being an all-time bad performance by a first-team All-NBA player. 1-14. I could not believe the in-game turnaround he had. You never see a player go from that bad. And it wasn't just the scoring. He had the turnover on the fast break where he pulled up for three and then realized he was going to get blocked and just threw it to James Harden. He had the take foul or the clear path foul with 6 minutes left that could have been an absolute killer for the Celtics. And to come back from that, I think the Celtics are hoping that after that he'll start a little differently than he did in the previous games.
Jay, enjoy the game tonight. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah, Appreciate you.
That's Jay King at By Jay King on Twitter. Make sure you check out his work live now over at The Athletic, doing great work covering the Boston Celtics as their beat reporter. We have the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel coming up next to help us continue to get all of his thoughts on this game, whether it's spread, total, prop bets. Curious as well if the Celtics struggles at home might be anything that JVT has a concern about.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the authorized gaming partner of the NBA, hits the court with a special playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a one-game parlay of four legs or more and get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss one leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back a $25 bonus bet, even if one leg of your parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Washington, D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, and New York.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes at home, there's the focus can go a lot of different ways, you know. And I think at the end, and whereas on the road, it's like it's only you, 20 people, you know, however many people are in that timeout or on that bench. And so, regardless of where we play, we just have to have that level of focus on the details, you know. And then, you know, our energy has to come from our togetherness, our physicality on the defensive end. And so, I think just that small, you know, stuff like that.
That's Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla when asked about the struggles at home in this series against the 76ers. Celtics, a 6.5-point favorite tonight. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and we bring in senior NBA handicapper here at VSiN, Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, can they bring that togetherness and energy at home one more time to close out this series and cover the spread?
With their new starting lineup, you know, I love what they've decided to do here. Remember, Robert Williams was their starting center last year when they made it to the NBA Finals. And that tandem of him and Al Horford are brilliant. And the reason why the Celtics turned their season around last year when they were 18-21 is because Robert Williams changed his defensive assignments, or Ime Udoka changed his defensive assignments. It really opened up this defense. And I think that's the big change. I don't know if it's about focus. I think it's kind of odd. They've given a lot of voice to this. I don't know if you guys saw Jaylen Brown like asking the crowd to, you know, come up and show up that they've been okay. Like, it's kind of been a thing in terms of talking about the way that they perform at home. So maybe that's in the back of their mind. But, you know, and I know, you know, you guys have both talked to different professional athletes in different facets, and I have too. A lot of them do echo kind of the same stuff. Like, it's easier to kind of focus up on the road because it's a hostile environment of sorts. And when you're at home, when you're in your own bed, it tends to make the focus wander. However, I would think a game seven with the with a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals on the line, that focus would be perfectly easy to maintain when you're talking about playing at home, on the road, in a box, wherever they're going.
Yeah, JVT, we had Marcus Hayes on earlier, and the main question that everybody wants to know is what James Harden will we get? You know, in the contest that in the games they've won, he shot 60%, and he was 14-for-25 from the three-point line. In the losses, he's 2-for-19 from the three-point line, and he shot 9-for-44 inside the three. Like, what do you expect from Harden in this game?
You know, honestly, if we're going to buy in, Michael, to all of the improvements defensively that the Celtics now have with Robert Williams there, right? Now that Robert Williams can come in and contest shots within 4 feet, that he can actually make life a mess in the paint because he's going to be available there too. I think that kind of erodes what Harden wants to do, regardless of whether or not he's going to show up like focused like game one or game four Harden, because that changes so much if you're the Boston Celtics. Like, can you switch as much now? No. But now, of course, you can fight over screens. You can allow Harden to get to the paint. You have somebody like Robert Williams there to test. Same thing with Al Horford. It just mucks up the middle of the floor for the Philadelphia 76ers. So, unless Harden comes on, which is perfectly capable, right, as we've seen in two games so far the series, and all of a sudden he's otherworldly Harden, where he's hitting step backs and hitting catch-and-shoot attempts, and he's getting to the free-throw line with some consistency while facilitating, which is always, again, a possibility. You know, they can win this series, and they can, of course, move on. But I think the math for me, I'm such a big fan of that lineup and what it does for the Boston Celtics, that I think regardless of what Harden's going to do, I think it just severely limits what the Philadelphia 76ers do now. I mean, this has been the biggest weakness for Boston, right? Their offense has actually been on pretty much this entire series and throughout the postseason. It's been a lack of consistency on defense. And instead of going small like they have been throughout the majority of the postseason, now they're big. And that changes a lot of different things for them. So I think, you know, we could talk about Harden, but I think for the most part, it's about how they cracked one of the best defensive starting lineups that we've seen over the last 2 years.
JVT, I keep staring at this total sitting 201, 201 and a half right now. And we know in game sevens, you do see that tighter, more defensive type of a game. And 36-22 to the under in game seven since 2005, but 23-9 to the under in round twos or later. So the deeper that you get in the playoffs, the more that we see that stay true. But with this number being so low, is the over maybe worth a look in this game?
first, I got scared. I thought you were just staring at my goofy picture that we use for the screen there. No, I think, like, Stormy, I'm kind of like, I look at this and I see like 200 and a half out there, and I really want to go over the total because I understand the concept, right? Which is, hey, look, it is a game seven. We are going to be more half court oriented. We are already a series in which we averaged under 93 possessions per game. So it's not like we're going to be running up and down the floor. And we're two teams that now are a little bit bigger and want to run a little bit slower, right? Because we have multiple bigs on the floor at any given time. So, like, I understand why that would drop. However, like, let's look at Boston and the way they operate. Boston is a primarily three-point shooting team. That's not going to change with Robert Williams out there. Al Horford's still a three-point shooter. So you have four guys who can shoot and space the floor. Robert Williams does allow you, if you're Boston, to have a lob threat as well, which you didn't really have out there with Al Horford. So you can get to the basket. You can run pick and roll. So your offense doesn't really change. And we know about how good Philadelphia can be in terms of their offense and their individual scorers, Tyrese Maxey, James Harden, Joel Embiid, and their other role players. And when guys like Tyrese Maxey are in control of the offense, well, he's like a transition possession all in his own right, right? He can get up and down the floor as quick as anybody. So while I understand the concept and I understand how much this has been baked into this number, think about it like this. This is a series that had an average total of about 213 and a half. And while you think like, well, 13 points isn't that much. Well, it is when you consider that the average total has been 213 and a half, right? 11 points, 12 points in a series of an average total of 213 percentage-wise is a much bigger adjustment than an 11-point adjustment in, say, Golden State and Sacramento, right? In a series in which they're going up and down the floor. So I'm it's one of those things, Stormy, where I want to bet this thing over. But I talked to Doug Desiree, and I always give him credit for this because it's such a good line. Do you want to bet this game over and watch these two teams walk up and down the floor and just agonize over every single possession, even though you feel you might be right and have some value here? You would kick yourself watching this entire time. So I haven't decided, but I would very much, if you're asking me over or under, it's over.
But the correlation, JVT, 6.5 to this under over total, it seems a little out of whack to me. I'm almost inclined, and you know I'm always going to be on the side of go against the Sixers. But to me, 6.5 seems like an awful lot in this game.
Michael, and you're absolutely right. I brought this up a couple of times, and I've been wondering why the market, right? So we had 7.5 as the opener. We're down to 6.5. And I likened it to market taking 7.5. It's like taking a touchdown in a game where like the total's like 40, right? Or 42.5, where, hey, look, this is a really low total. Why would I not take the points? Because this team might just stay inside of a touchdown because it's such a low scoring affair. And I liken it to that. And I think you're right. But as somebody who really believes in this Celtics lineup and the changes that they've made, the fact that I think that maybe you should even either slightly upgrade Boston or just leave them where they were, and who leans toward the over, like, that's where I think that I would come in and maybe lay it with Boston as opposed to betting it over, because I think there is somewhat of a slight correlation there where, you know, if you're laying it with Boston, probably more than likely it's going to go over the total because the Celtics are going to shoot well, operate well, you know, all of those things. But I also think because Boston's going to have success, there's a chance that they absolutely shut down Philadelphia and that this thing stays under because of it. But I think overall, to your point, those two things kind of don't jive, right? A really big total and a low total, or excuse me, a really big number and a low total. So that's why I tend to lean over and with Boston. But more importantly, I'm on the Boston side here today. I think the Celtics, with the changes they've made, have enough here to cover that kind of a number.
Last minute and a half here, JVT. Maybe don't have your team have the best record in the NBA over the last six seasons or win NBA Coach of the Year, because you're going to be out and no longer a head coach, it seems, based on recent history. What did you make of the Suns firing Monty Williams yesterday?
You know, honestly, unwarranted, but when you get a new owner, Stormy, like, those things are going to happen, right? Man, Ispia comes in, he wants to do everything like that he wants to do. He reportedly really pushed for them to go get Kevin Durant, and now he wants a new guy in there. But look, when you gut a roster the way that they did, I don't know what the expectation was in the postseason. You know, this is coming from somebody that bet against them in both series. So you kind of, I think, at least saw this coming, where you have a very limited roster and not a lot of help for those two guys. They're one transaction cycle away from potentially being complete and a real contender. So I don't think Monty Williams deserved to be fired at all. If you watch the shortcomings of this series for the Suns, I don't think it was coaching. I thought it was all about the roster and how short this team was. So, look, hopefully they'll get somebody good, but I definitely thought that it was unwarranted to fire Monty Williams because of it. But who knows? Maybe there's some personal differences in the background that we don't know about, because that's always a fact.
Good stuff, JVT. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, JVT. Appreciate you, man.
That is our guy, Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA betting analyst here at the network. Also, make sure you check out the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. He and Kelly Bidlin every weekday dropping new episodes available wherever you get your podcasts. Michael, believe it or not, this is an NFL show. We're going to talk some NFL when we come back here. Yes, we got season win totals, some great guests, good stuff coming up.